Hey guys, welcome to episode 98 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now in this episode, I got on the show Emily Burns. Emily is a teacher and poet, and I've been following her on Instagram for some time and reading all her poems, which I really enjoy. But it's special to this podcast because several of those poems are based around OCD and her experience of OCD. And also she writes about anxiety and mental illness in general. And as always, I say, more importantly, recovery. And her book, which she released a couple months ago, is called A Strangely Wrapped Gift. And we get into the meaning of that title in relation to OCD. I read four of the poems out that I really liked, and I ask Emily for the meaning behind them, which I found really interesting. Emily kindly shared her OCD story in detail, which I think there was some several life lessons which I really liked and I think you'll enjoy, and I'm sure many of you will find comfort in her story. But overall, it was a thoroughly enjoyable chat with Emily. It was nice to speak with her. I think you're going to enjoy this one. So if you can, go follow her on Instagram, check out her book if you want. And without further ado, here is Emily. On today's podcast, I have Emily Burns. Emily is a teacher and poet. Her new book, A Strangely Wrapped Gift, is a collection of poems, including some on OCD and mental health. Welcome to the podcast, Emily.
Hi, Stuart. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. I've been following you for a while and seeing your various poems on OCD, which triggered this interview. So we're going to get into your book and stuff and your poems, but I guess before we get started, it'd be good to hear your OCD story in as little or as much detail as you want to give.
Sure, absolutely. So I would say I've been struggling with OCD since I was 10 years old, and it went undiagnosed until I was 26. So that is like just a really huge defining chapter of my life.
Yeah.
I very clearly remember my very first experience with an intrusive thought. Like I said, I was 10 and I was outside with my sister and my dog. We live in upstate New York, so lots of snow. And we were digging snow forts, like in these huge piles of snow in my yard, and we all had shovels. And my dog walked by, and I remember having the thought, like, what if you hurt your dog with the shovel? Mm. And that was really terrifying because I was 10.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a good kid. I was sort of one of those kids who just followed all the rules and did what her parents asked of her and got good grades, and it just really didn't align with who I was as a person.
Yeah.
So I immediately ran inside and I did not play with shovels anymore. But from there, it really sort of got out of hand, and I started having a lot of intrusive thoughts about harming other people close to me. And this continued pretty much throughout all of high school, and I lost a lot of sleep over it. And it was just really disturbing because I felt like it was something I couldn't talk to anybody else about because I was afraid people would think I was crazy.
Yeah.
So pretty much during the day I functioned okay, like shutting the thoughts out, but I was so terrified of like around the time of sunset because I just knew that soon people would go to bed and I would be the only one awake. Yeah. And I had horrible, horrible intrusive thoughts at night, especially when I was just like, you know, laying in bed with my own thoughts. So I went through a couple of different, I guess, OCD themes, you would say. The really prevalent one was like the thoughts of harming people that I loved. I also struggled with, when I was in middle school, we watched this documentary about like the Salem witch trials. So that sort of sparked a whole new, I guess, theme for me, and I was always worried that I was possessed. So that sort of became a new obsession, and pretty much my entire life I just did everything I could to avoid the thoughts, which, as you know, makes them worse.
Yeah.
It's hard though, right? When I it's so hard. And especially if you don't know.
Yeah, of course.
You know, if you're undiagnosed.
Yeah.
So I guess it got really bad when I went to college. I was a sophomore in college. And I started having the intrusive thoughts again about harming other people. And it got to the point where I was doing so much to avoid the thoughts that I wouldn't even touch any type of object that you could possibly harm another person with. So, like, I wouldn't use like forks and knives. I was terrified of using pens and pencils. I threw away all of my roommates' like dining utensils, which was really annoying. But I threw them away because I was so terrified of having them in my vicinity. And I pretty much had a mental breakdown. And I started talking to people about it, and I wasn't completely honest. I would just say like, "Oh, I'm having really bad thoughts." So everybody sort of said, "Oh, well, it sounds like you have anxiety." And then they would explain what anxiety was to me, and then that would make me feel even worse because it just, I mean, of course I was having anxiety, but they would say, "You know, maybe you're nervous about like a test coming up or, you know, this or
Sort of
that."
real world
And
problems as opposed to ones that were just in your head.
yes. So that just made me sort of clam up about the whole thing even more because I was like, okay, nobody has any idea what's in my head, so I better keep this to myself. I guess, long story short, I finally was diagnosed at the age of 26, which was about a year and a half ago. And it wasn't until a friend of a friend, he went to the OCDI in Boston. I don't know if you're familiar. And I just by chance, we were in the same place at the same time. We weren't like really, we were more of acquaintances, I guess. And he started talking to me about his OCD. And to me, growing up, I always thought OCD was, you know, perfectionism and liking things clean and neat and organized. So he was telling me about his intrusive thoughts, which, you know, I won't get into, but he was telling me sort of like how OCD worked, and I was like, oh my God, like I think I have OCD. So I went to, and I had also been through so many therapists who just weren't very helpful because I don't think they really knew about OCD. So I finally went to a therapist and I just explained everything. And like I was honest about all of my thoughts I've had and all of the compulsions that I would perform. And so I was finally diagnosed with OCD. And since then, it's just been like I felt very empowered, I guess, because, you know, I can only imagine how many other kids go through the same thing that I did, just like having these intrusive thoughts and keeping them to yourself because you're afraid of what other people will think. So I really just wanted to like spread awareness of OCD through writing, because, you know, OCD is so misunderstood, I think, of a mental illness. And there's still that stigma that so many people just think it's about hand washing. So, you know, I really try to communicate what OCD really is through my writing. And I'm very open about my OCD, even though sometimes it makes people uncomfortable, I think, because they don't understand it. But that's pretty much how I got to where I am now.
No, thank you for sharing your story and for being so open. I can completely relate throughout like my childhood. I didn't say anything because I didn't want to quote unquote seem insane. Which it's understandable because you don't want to be ostracized by your family. You don't want to be my view of mental illness as a kid was the kind of straitjacket image.
Oh, yes,
So
me too.
I didn't want to be in an insane asylum, etc. It is scary for a child. It's hard for them to open up, for some children that is. And the whole misconception thing, I completely agree. We all know it's terrible, the whole, I'm so OCD or this
Oh,
about
yes.
orderly and neatness. And a good example, because originally I was so focused on that, and now I'm trying to look for other examples in the world where we as a society believe one thing and it's completely wrong. And there's a couple that one that came up for me yesterday, which I'll explain, but a good example is wolves. So wolves aren't actually that dangerous. I think there've only been two deaths in America in the last 100 years. So if they were that dangerous, there would be way more deaths. And I'm sure the,
right.
the common house dog has killed more people in the last 100 years than a wolf has.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I mean, that's one thing. Movies have made wolves look evil and bad, and they're not. And the other thing was, so yesterday I was doing a first aid course, and we had to learn CPR, so to resuscitate someone when their heart had stopped. And definitely in the UK, and it's probably the same in the States as well, where, you know, when they give the, I'm blanking on the machine now, defibrillator, where they shock them on their chest, and they put one paddle on the left sort of breast area and one on the right, that's complete rubbish. They've never ever in any hospital in the world done that. What they do is they put one on the right breast area and the other one on the left ribs under the armpit, because the shock needs to go from one pad to the other through the heart. So putting them both on the chest wouldn't do anything or wouldn't help. And that amazed me that, you know, growing up seeing all these hospital TV shows and movies, you always saw them do that. And it's a it's a complete lie. But we've adopted that. And it's the same thing for OCD. You know, a few shows or news programs share the wrong image of OCD, and then suddenly it's everywhere.
Right.
And I think, so it's not just OCD, but obviously the OCD is the area that matters to us most. But there's a lot I think the media needs to do to step up in terms of fact checking various things.
I was on Facebook the other day, and I saw it was like a test to see if you had OCD, and it was like, you know, this series of images, and I guess the concept was if you could pick out the image that wasn't like the other ones, you know, every time, that meant you had OCD.
Yeah, your attention to detail and all that rubbish.
Oh my gosh, I was pretty enraged by that.
Yeah, it's understandable. Those things are unfortunately going around all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously your poems help kind of break that and re-educate people, which is good. There's a couple bits in your story, actually, that I wanted to highlight. One was when you threw away all your flatmate or housemates' cooking utensils, how did you explain that to them?
Actually, I didn't. I did it when they weren't in the room.
Yeah.
And when they were like, oh, where are my knives? I just sort of didn't say anything. But they certainly knew that I struggled with mental illness.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't think they had any idea that I threw away their forks and knives, though.
Fair enough. And so when you finally got the diagnosis, was that just you kind of saying, I've had enough, I need to find out what's going on, and you making that call, or was someone else kind of encouraging you?
I think it was sort of a combination. I had actually started struggling with relationship obsessions.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the part I forgot to mention, but I'm married right now.
Cool.
And after I got engaged, I started having some pretty bad relationship OCD. And so I guess the last straw was that it was really starting to affect another person. I guess for most of my life, it was pretty much only affecting me. I mean, I'm sure it affected my family and whatnot, but it started to really affect my fiance because it was just destroying our relationship.
Yeah.
So it was very much like a last straw type thing where, you know, I was very frustrated because I felt like I had a lot of really good therapists, but I felt like no one ever really helped me. Like I felt like we would, you know, they would talk and we had these great conversations and like they would make me feel better, and they were good therapists. Like, I'm not saying anything bad about any of them.
Yeah.
It's just that I don't think they knew how to treat OCD. So once I was diagnosed, I put a very, very serious effort into finding a therapist who was specialized in OCD and someone who could teach me ERP. And actually I kind of learned about ERP through your podcast, like,
cool,
a year and a half ago. So I will say I had to work really, really hard to find a good OCD therapist and someone who could help me do ERP, which I think a lot of people get discouraged because it is sometimes so hard to find somebody. But I called and called and called and emailed this one woman until, because she's, you know, she's busy.
Yeah.
And I finally got an appointment with her. And I mean, she has really like helped me change my life, like learning ERP and just like what to do with the intrusive thoughts. Because I think if you go to a therapist who doesn't quite understand OCD and doesn't know ERP, I think a lot of times they can make your OCD worse. Because in my experience, what would always happen is the therapist would really want to like talk about the thoughts and try to figure out where they came from and like what like maybe the secret motive of your brain was for having these thoughts. And really all it ever did was, I feel like it made me go deeper and deeper into my obsessions, because then I felt like, oh gosh, not only am I having these horrible thoughts, but they must have like a meaning.
Yes.
So then I would try to figure out what the meaning was, like, you know, maybe I'm a bad person or maybe I am insane. And they just sort of inadvertently, I think, made problems worse. So I think finding someone who understands OCD and who can help you with ERP is that, like, that changed my life.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And yeah, that's very important. And it's kind of like a good analogy, I guess, is if a mechanic, you know, is used to fixing Toyotas and then suddenly there's a Chrysler in front of them, they'll be able to somewhat help that Chrysler fix it, but they won't know the in and outs of Chrysler, especially in the modern day where cars are all computerized. So often the mechanics have to go on extra training courses to understand how Chryslers work. And it's the same in therapy. You know, they can help somewhat and understand to a point, but unless they've been on that OCD course or CBT course for anxiety problems, they're probably not going to be able to truly help at the core of the problem.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth me highlighting, like, you know, you said you didn't get a response straight away. You kept calling, you kept emailing. And I think that's a very good lesson for people listening who are struggling right now to get treatment, is to kind of not give up and keep pestering them.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll get there in the end.
Yeah, I think I emailed this woman 6 times before she got back to me. And I mean, trust me, you feel annoying.
Yeah.
But you have to advocate for yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good point. And other than obviously therapy, which has been massive for you, have there been anything else that you've changed about your lifestyle that has helped in recovery?
I mean, I try to be as healthy as I can. I think exercise is really big for me. And I think just making sure I stay busy is important for me.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, keep a constant distraction so you don't have obsessions. It's more like keep your mind occupied with something positive.
Yeah.
Because I find that when my brain has idle time, that's when my intrusive thoughts really start to, it's like they see a weakness, so they creep in.
Yeah.
So, you know, I try to, that's another reason I started writing more is, you know, if you're writing, your brain is pretty busy, where if you're just sitting and watching TV, your brain can sort of wander a bit.
Yeah.
I do watch TV, but I try to make sure I don't have like days and days of idle time. You know, like I'm a teacher. So summer vacation, I think before I got help for OCD, I didn't do much over summer vacation, but now I make sure that I sort of have a purpose, I guess.
Yeah.
That's been helpful. Another thing that's been really helpful is just letting the people around me know what's going on, which I think can be really scary, especially if you have obsessions that people might think negatively of.
Yeah.
But so my husband, he knows all about my OCD. I've told my parents, I've told my sisters. So that's been really helpful just because now I have a support system, whereas before I was diagnosed, I really didn't have a support system. I mean, I did, but now they know how to help me, I guess, is what I mean.
Yeah.
So, because no, I just think a big part of, you know, when I was going through really bad times, it would be a lot of me just like crying and talking to other people and them just having no idea like what was wrong with me and me not saying what was really wrong with me. And I think it was really more confusing for people around me than anything else. So I think at least having one person who really understands what you're going through is important.
Yeah, it's huge. And I think that's a good point you made there about, you know, the people around you being confused. And quite often that can be harder for them when they don't know the cause of it. They care for you and they want to help you. And if they're just seeing you kind of distraught, that can be tough on them. Whereas obviously when you opened up, it's still hard on them, but they can understand, they know this will pass, or they know what to do, and it's more empowering for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Cool. One question that came to my mind was, some people obviously have had OCD in childhood and then didn't get diagnosed until their 20s or far later. How did you go about telling your parents?
I just was open with them.
Yeah.
Because I had been struggling. I guess I went through like waves in my life where there might be a couple months where I was really bad and then a couple of months where the obsessions weren't so bad. So I think that it wasn't really surprising to them, but I mean, I just told my mom over the phone, and I explained to her what OCD was, and she was just very understanding. And my dad was actually very understanding and supportive. I was actually surprised at how supportive they were, just because OCD is so little understood, but I think they really made an effort to like understand what was going on and what the struggle was surrounding OCD. So I was just open with them.
Yeah.
Which is easier said than done, but
yeah,
I think
it must have been quite anxious for you, anxiety provoking.
Yeah, but I think if you have a good relationship with your parents and or your siblings, just tell them.
Yeah. Okay, great. And good to hear they were supportive. So your book of poems is called A Strangely Wrapped Gift, and I believe this is intertwined with OCD, and I just wondered if you could explain the meaning behind that.
Oh yes. So A Strangely Wrapped Gift, the title actually came from something my OCD therapist said to me. It was around the time of my wedding, which I got married this past July.
Congrats.
Thank you. I had been struggling with a relationship, OCD over the past, you know, year or two. So she had warned me, you know, like a wedding can be a hard time for someone that's struggling with relationship OCD.
Yeah.
And actually the wedding was great. OCD did not bother me at all. But then the day after the wedding, it really sort of set in. And so when I came back from the honeymoon, I had an appointment with my therapist, and she said to me that, you know, that day after was sort of like a strangely wrapped gift, because even though that day was horrible, I was able to like do my ERP and get myself in a better headspace before we left for our vacation.
Yeah.
She just used the term a strangely wrapped gift a couple of times, and it really resonated with me. In even like a deeper meaning, like in the preface of my book, I sort of explain this too, but I'll explain it here. Like, I don't think in any way that having a mental illness is a gift at all. You know, I don't think it should be romanticized, but I do think for somebody like me who's been diagnosed and who is sort of on the road to recovery, like, you know, you can use that in a positive way. Like, you can help other people, especially younger people, know their options. Like, you can help point people in the direction of therapy. I mean, as for being a teacher, like, I'm very comfortable talking to students about mental illness. Like, kids can come in my room during lunch, and, you know, I've had, like, really serious talks with kids about their mental illness struggles.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, I refer them to the school psychologist after, but, you know, I don't feel uncomfortable talking to people who are struggling because I've sort of been there. And I just think, for me, it's not a gift to have OCD, but to be on the other side of, like, having been diagnosed and starting to really treat it, it can be positive for me now, because I feel that I can at least try to help other people.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. It's a tough one, as you said, to romanticize it or I guess try and find a silver lining. But to a point, everyone on earth is going to struggle at some point. They're going to have some difficult time, and they can either let that time beat them, or they can let it kind of make them better. And for me, I think that's where the gift is. Is as painful as it is for people, myself, there is an opportunity for growth. And I guess that's where that strangely wrapped gift is.
Absolutely. Yeah, so the book, it's sort of, there's 5 different OCD poems in the book.
Yep.
And they're just OCD 1 through 5. I just sort of like briefly cover my OCD journey through poetry. And of course, there's a lot of other stuff interwoven in the book, but that was something that was just really important for me to get in there. I mean, that's the reason why I became a writer, was because of my OCD, because it was just very therapeutic for me.
Excellent. Yeah, I was actually going to ask you that, so you've answered that. That's good. So yeah, poetry has been a creative outlet for you.
Yeah. And it's something, you know, that I can do at any time. You know, I think for a while, my sort of, I guess my own personal therapy was like going for runs.
Yeah.
But can't always go for a run.
No.
You know, I can always, you know, go on my phone and write, or just open up a notebook and write. You know, it's something that I can do pretty much anytime I need to. So that's been really helpful.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. And did you start the Instagram page, which I'll link in the show notes for everyone listening?
Thank you.
And to your book. Did you start the Instagram page around the time of starting recovery, or was it something that was going before?
No, I started it after I had started down my road to recovery. Mm. Because I would never have had the courage, I guess, to write about mental illness before I had been diagnosed and started down the path of recovery. So that was something that came after.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. And as you say, it's something positive. It's kind of using that time to do something more value-led, something that's meaningful to you. And I think it can help, as maybe you found, is putting your energies into something more creative can help you kind of leave the thoughts alone, so to speak, and just let them be there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So what we're going to do is I've highlighted 4 poems, all kind of, I think I highlighted them because I think they were recovery focused.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to see, you know, why you wrote it and your meaning behind it.
Sure.
So the first one on page 93, anyone who has the book, it's called On Anxiety. Did you want to read it as you're the poet, or should I?
I think you should read it because you have a British accent, and I always think British accents read poetry better.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Let's give it a go then. The anxiety you feel is just a scared little child. Hold her, dry her tears, and promise her you've got this, because you do. I like this, and I might explain why, but I just wanted to get, you know, your take on this poem.
So this was another poem that was sort of inspired by my OCD therapist. She actually told me a strategy when you're struggling with anxiety that you can use is to sort of like think of your anxiety as a whole other entity. Like, you know, think of the things your anxiety is telling you. Imagine like a little kid was saying that to you. And what would you say to that kid that was scared over things that maybe they didn't need to be scared about? Like, you wouldn't be hard on them. I think often we're hard on ourselves and, you know, we call our anxiety stupid or, you know, we'll explain anxiety to someone and be like, I'm sorry, like, that's so dumb, but it's just worrying me. And she sort of just told me when I'm really having anxiety to treat yourself like you would treat a scared child. So that's sort of where that came from.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a really good way of looking at anxiety, because as you say, when we're I don't say mean to our anxiety, but when we're trying to get rid of it, push it away, we're actually going to get more of it. It's paradoxical, but when we can allow it to be there and say, okay, I don't like this, but I'm gonna give it room for it to exist, it soon goes. And as you say, a nice way of doing that is to see it as a scared little child that you need to hug and tell that it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Okay. So the next one is it's called On Mental Illness on page 112, and it goes like this: How do you combat a foe who lives inside your mind? You love yourself and forgive yourself and let yourself be helped and work and work and work until the demons dance a little quieter, and then you do it again. So just be good to get your take on that.
So for me, this one is just about like not giving up. Because I think that sometimes with recovery, we get frustrated because we want there to be like a finish line.
Yeah.
And the truth is, there very rarely is a finish line for mental illness. It's just about, you know, don't give up. Like, keep doing the things that you need to do to keep yourself mentally healthy. And just forgive yourself, because I know for me, I used to get frustrated because I would say, you know, I'm doing my ERP, like I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to be doing. Like, why am I still having these obsessions? And if you think of it like that, it's not constructive. It's not going to help you get out of that bad place.
Yeah.
It's just, you have to be forgiving of yourself. You have to say, you know, this is okay. This is going to happen. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, really good. Yeah, self-acceptance and compassion are really important. And I like how you ended it and then you do it again, because positive mental health is a skill, and it's something you need to repeatedly do. Same as, you know, if you stop lifting weights or running, you get bad at lifting weights and are bad at running. It's a habit.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah. Again, next one is brief, on page 134. And it goes like this: Take a break from it, all of it. Step back and observe the beauty of your fight. You can continue tomorrow, but for now, just breathe. So, I just wanted to see what that meant to you.
Just again, along the lines of forgiving yourself, not feeling like you have to conquer everything in one day. You know, just take, for me, it's just about taking every day one step at a time and not, I guess for me, because I'm very hard on myself usually, so I have to remind myself, you know, whatever your struggle or challenge is for the day, if you can't solve it immediately, it's okay. Like, just relax, just breathe, just focus on being okay in this moment. So I guess it's sort of like about mindfulness too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that. I really like that. And then, often I can't explain why I like poetry. It often just resonates with me, kind of, I don't know, in my heart, for want of a better phrase, more so than my head.
Mm-hmm.
So when I read something, it kind of sticks out. So this next one on page 165, called Asking the Stars, goes like this: I often ask the stars, what would they do if they were me? But they just keep shining, and so do I. So yeah, what does this mean?
this is actually like one of my favorite pieces that I put in the book.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, it's sort of like just a poetic way of just do you,
yeah.
You know, just do the best you can every day. Don't worry about how other people are doing or what other people are doing. Just do the best you can.
Yeah.
That's it, really.
Yeah, no, I love that. Absolutely. We're all individuals and we have to know who we are and then do that, whatever that is. For a star, it's shining. For you, it's this poetry. For me, it's this podcast, I guess.
And, yeah.
yeah, I think that's an important message for people.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thanks. And okay, so got a few questions now. You listen to podcasts, I believe, so you should be familiar with these. The first one is, you're in an elevator with someone who has OCD. They've just told you, you got 30 seconds of them. What do you tell them?
The very first thing I would say was, are you getting help? Do you have a therapist? Hmm. And if they said no, I would ask them why. And if it was because they were scared or they said, I can't find a therapist, I would just like super, super encourage them to try to find a therapist. And I think that would take up about all of my 30 seconds, but I could probably go on and on with them, you know, forever.
Yeah.
But I guess the real thing I would say is, do you have a therapist and are you getting help?
Yeah, no, great advice. Okay, so the next one is, you live in New York, I believe, or near New York?
Yeah, I live in New York. Okay. New York State, not New York City. State.
Yeah, cool. So you got a billboard in New York State. What do you want on that billboard for the world to see?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. You know what? I really like the phrase, it gets better. Mm. Just because it's so relatable to anybody. You know, it doesn't have to be about mental illness. Just the phrase, it gets better, because it does. It always gets better. Whatever it is, it'll get better.
Yeah, absolutely. So what advice do you have for anyone who wants to live kind of, I'm going to say amazing life, but let's put it in the context of the last poem about stars, you know, what advice do you have for them to be themselves and keep shining?
I would say focus on the things that make you feel fulfilled. And I would say fulfilled over happy, because I think sometimes things can make you feel very happy on the surface, but they don't make you feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
I think that can help you live your best life. And, you know, I'm not an expert. Like, I definitely, you know, I say these things, but, you know, I still struggle with all of these things too. But I think, you know, surrounding yourself with people that build you up rather than are just sort of there or knock you down is really important. And I think having, at least for me, having a creative outlet is very important. It's very fulfilling. Having a job that, you know, that you're at least somewhat passionate about, which I know not everybody is there right now, but at least working towards being able to do something that you're passionate about. You know, just focus on doing the things that you love without being selfish. So it's sort of like spread positivity and surround yourself with people that build you up rather than knock you down. Yeah. And not to confuse that, like, I'm not saying, you know, always be doing something that's making you happy or always be doing something fulfilling, but just try to make sure you have things that fulfill you in your life.
Yeah, really good advice. And is there anything else I haven't asked you that you want to say or put out into the world?
I don't think so. I think, you know, I got a chance to share my OCD story, which was really cool. So thank you.
My pleasure. Cool. Well, yeah, thank you for coming on.
Of course. Yeah. Honestly, I've been listening to this podcast for a long time and it really helped. I have a 40-minute commute to work and I would listen to this podcast and it really helped me through some of my deep struggles with relationship OCD. So I am super honored to be here.
No, thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate it.
Hey, guys. So I hope you enjoy my chat with Emily. All the resources mentioned will be in the show notes on the website at theocdstories.com/podcast. And a quick disclaimer, this podcast is not therapy, nor should it be a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And I will speak to you soon.